Mid-flight? Chubbs asked, his voice brimming with hope. Over a desert? Vida slid into the seat to the right of mine before Liam could. We're not dumping him yet, are we, Boo? She knew exactly what I was thinking. This was what the League had taught us to do when we located a valuable asset. You brought him in, bled him for intel, and then traded him for something better. I shook my head, trying not to smile at the alarm that flashed in his dark eyes. No, we're not. The look he gave me in return made my skin feel tight around my bones. But what could he do? Nothing that I couldn't do right back to him 5 times over. I could tell Chubbs wanted to ask exactly what we meant by that, but the pilot's voice interrupted, telling us he had finished his final checks and was ready for takeoff. I didn't relax my grip on the gun until we were up in the air, sailing high above the jagged peaks of the Rockies. For all the grumbling he'd done about how much more likely it was for this kind of jet to crash than a normal passenger plane, Chubbs passed out in his seat 5 minutes after the plane was in the air. I glanced over my shoulder, watching as he began to slowly drift too far to the right, only to startle awake for an instant and catch himself. The others had laid their seats out flat or curled up on them, using the blankets we'd found in one of the storage compartments. Clancy unbuckled his seatbelt, pushing onto his feet. "Going somewhere?" I asked. "To use the bathroom in the back," he snapped. "Why? Do you need to come in and watch?" "No, but I followed him to the back regardless, shooting him a meaningful look as he slammed the door and locked it." I leaned back against the shelves of drinks and serviceware in the back. My eyes drifted from Liam to Vida to Chubbs, and then, finally, to Jude, sitting nearby. He'd been so quiet up until then, I'd just assumed he'd fallen asleep like the others. "Hi," I whispered. He had been staring out the window to the unending stretch of land below, and he stayed that way, even when I touched his shoulder. Jude, who hated silence, whose past slithered up to him like a shadow along glass, did not say a single word. I sat down on his chair's armrest, glancing across the way to make sure both Liam and Chubbs were still asleep. I had known worried Jude, and terrified Jude, and ecstatic Jude, but never this shade of him. "Talk to me," I said. Jude burst into tears. "Hey," I said, taking his shoulder. "I know it doesn't feel this way, but it'll be okay." It took several minutes of coaxing for him to settle down and sit up. His skin went blotchy and his nose refused to stop running. He swiped it against the arm of his jacket. "You should have been there. With them. I could have helped them somehow. Kate and Albin. They needed me and I wasn't there." "And thank God for that," I said. "Otherwise you'd be trapped there with all of the others." Or dead. It was too horrible to even consider. I put an arm around him, and whatever invisible string had been holding him up promptly snapped. He leaned into my shoulder, still crying. "Oh my God," he muttered. "This is so not cool. It's just, I'm really scared Kate's dead too. All of them. It's like Blake all over again, and I'm just as responsible. Would any of this have even happened if I hadn't been so stupid? If Rob and Jarvin hadn't caught us listening that day?" I blew out the breath I didn't realize I had been holding and rubbed his arm. "None of this is your fault," I told him. "None of it. You aren't responsible for what other people do, good or bad. Everyone is just making the choices they think will help them get by." He nodded, swiping at his eyes with the back of his hand. For a long while, the only sound between us was the moaning of engines and Chubbs's rhythmic snores. "But I could have made a difference," Jude whispered. "I could have fought. I..." "No," I interrupted. "I'm sorry. I get where you're coming from, and they're all good thoughts, but I just don't think it's worth it. It's not worth it to weigh what you could have done or should have done when there's no way of changing it. And it's not worth risking your life over. Nothing is more important or valuable than your life. Got it? He nodded, but was quiet again. A little more settled, I thought, than before. It's just not fair, Jude said. None of this is fair. Life isn't fair, I said. It's taken me a while to get that. It's always going to disappoint you in some way or another. You'll make plans, and it'll push you in another direction. You will love people, and they'll be taken away no matter how hard you fight to keep them. You'll try for something and won't get it. You don't have to find meaning in it. You don't have to try to change things. You just have to accept the things that are out of your hands and try to take care of yourself. That's your job. He nodded. I waited until he had taken a deep breath and seemed a little more composed before I stood and ruffled his unruly hair. I was sure he'd groan or bat my hand away. Instead, he caught it with his own. Ruby. His face was drawn. Not sad exactly, just tired, I thought. If you can't change anything, then what's the point of it? I wrapped my fingers around his and gave his hand a steady squeeze. I don't know, but when I figure that out, you'll be the first to know. 28. I never thought I'd be so happy to see California's uneven, fractured mess of a freeway system as we headed toward the glowing high-rises of downtown Los Angeles. The ride was bumpy as all get out, and the familiar stench of gasoline was working its magic through the car vents, smothering even the unnerving new car smell clinging to the leather seats. It didn't matter much to any of us, though. There had been a large black SUV waiting for us on the runway when we disembarked at LAX. I cut Clancy's hands free so he could take the car key offered by a man in a dress suit and black sunglasses, but he was back at the wrong end of my gun before he could think of trying to get away. After it just being the five of us for so long, I felt Jude flinch at the look the man passed over him. We need to talk about a plan, I said once we were in the car, miles away from the airport. It was just past 7 in the evening. If things had been normal at HQ, the first of 2 night classes would just be starting. Then it would be 2 hours to mandatory lights out, and another hour before the agents had to retreat to their quarters. It would be safer and easier to try to round up the kids from a single location, the sleeping rooms on the second level, but there were cameras in every corner. Not to mention, success depended on 3 very big ifs. If we got that far, if we found the entrance, if we didn't get caught sneaking in. And that's only if they are running the usual schedule, I added. Did Nico say anything about it? Hey! I gripped the already torn collar of Clancy's shirt. I'm asking you a question. Clancy grit his teeth. He hasn't responded to my last few messages. I'm assuming they took the chatters away to keep rumors from spreading. They'd be running the usual schedule, Vida said with certainty from the driver's seat. They wouldn't want any of the kids to know that Albin was out. That'd cause a massive amount of panic, right? They wouldn't tell any of them the actual objective. How are they going to rig the explosives without the kids figuring it out? Liam asked. It seems like a vest of the stuff would be a pretty big clue. That's the easy part, Clancy said. You break them up into small groups of 2 or 3, sew the explosives into the lining of a coat, and set it up with a remote detonator. All you have to do is wait to give the kids the jackets until the very end. He said it casually, without a hint of disgust, like some part of him actually admired the plan. That means prep time at HQ will be minimal. If they're moving the kids out at 6 or so, wake up will be at 5. I shifted to look at Vida in the driver's seat. Does it make more sense to go in at 3 or 4? 4, she said. 4? Clancy repeated like it was the stupidest thing he'd ever heard. Sure, if you want to give yourself a better chance of being caught. Mandatory rolling blackouts, I explained to the others, ignoring him. California has been trying to conserve energy that way. They happen every night in our area between 3 and 5. The security system and cameras are the only things hooked up to the backup generator. But it'll at least be dark in the hallways as we're moving through them. Once we're in, I can go take care of the agents in the monitor room, Vida said. We won't even have to shut the system off. How long do you think it'll take to get in and out through this entrance of yours? I don't know. I've never walked it. I've only seen them bring people in and out. Where does it lead? Jude asked. And how come I don't know about it? I looked down at my hands, trying to keep my voice light. It's where they brought traitors and key assets for questioning, and then took them out. Holy shit! They did have you torture people, Vida said, looking both intrigued and impressed. So did Clancy. Where is it? I didn't torture them, I protested weakly. Just questioned them. Aggressively. Liam kept his gaze focused on something outside of his window, but I felt him tense to the point of snapping beside me. It's the locked door on the third level, isn't it? Jude asked. The one just past the computer room? Alban told me once it leads out to an entrance near the 7th Street Bridge over the Los Angeles River, I said. If they're holding any of the agents or hiding the evidence of what they've done, it'll be in that room. Okay, well, bypassing the fact that the League has a secret torture dungeon, Liam said, are we sure they won't have blocked the path in and out? Why do you all keep saying we? Clancy asked. I hope you don't think I'm coming down in that shithole with you. Too bad for you. You're the only one who doesn't get a choice about it, I said. You want to see what's happening at the League? You want to chat with your friend Nico again? You got it. Front row seat. He must have suspected it would come to this all along, but he didn't look afraid. Maybe after everything, he still wasn't convinced that I was willing to serve him up on a platter to the League to let them do with him what they would. Maybe he already knew that I would trade him to Jarvin and the others if it meant getting the other kids away. If there was so much as a crack in this plan, he'd find a way to slip through it. Which meant I would have to watch him that much closer, staying 3 steps ahead of him instead of just one. What does happen if we can't get them out undetected? Chubbs asked. Then they're going to have to do what they were trained to, I said, and fight back. The Los Angeles River was a 48-mile stretch of concrete that had always served as more of a punchline than an actual river. At one point in its long life, it probably had been a real waterway. But humanity had swept in and constrained its flow to a single concrete channel that wound its way around the outskirts of the city, lined on either side by railroad tracks. Kate had pointed it out once when we'd left on an op, telling me that they used to film car chases down there for movies that I'd never heard of. Now, though, if you were to walk its length, which was usually as parched as the ground had been in Pueblo, you'd be hard-pressed to find anything other than the electric colors of graffiti tags and wandering homeless folks trying to find a place to settle for the night. If it did happen to rain, which was rare in Southern California, all sorts of things washed out of the storm drains and into the open river. Shopping carts, trash bags, deflated basketballs, stuffed animals, the occasional dead body. I'm not seeing anything, Chubbs muttered, holding the flashlight higher so I could scan the bridge's support pillars again. Are you sure? Here! Vida called over to us from across the channel. Liam waved his flashlight once so we'd see them. The streetlights were off, and without the light pollution that usually came from the city, we were both struggling to see anything beyond a few feet in front of us and to not be spotted by anyone else. I took Liam's arm and guided him down the slope of the embankment, then up again to the other side, to the place where the arch of the bridge's underbelly met the ground. I kept my flashlight aimed at Clancy's back, making sure he walked the entire way in front of me. Jude, I thought, counting them off with my eyes. Liam, Vida, Chubbs. I think this is it. Vida stepped back, keeping her own flashlight aimed at the huge, swirling patterns of graffiti. There was a blue star at the center of it, But it was the way the paint looked that gave the hidden door away. It was thicker here, to the point that it looked sticky to the touch. I felt for a disguised handle before throwing my shoulder against it. The panel of cement swung inward, scraping the loose rubble on the other side. Vida, Liam, and I leaned in, shining our flashlights down the metal staircase. I reached over and hauled Clancy to the front. "You first." If it were possible, this tunnel was somehow even cruder than the tunnel we usually took in and out of HQ. It was also about 10 times longer and filthier. Clancy stumbled in front of me, barely catching himself with a quiet curse. The walls, which had started out wide enough for us to walk 3 across, narrowed until we were forced into a single-file line. Liam was at my back, the damp, rancid air wheezing in and out of his lungs in a way that was starting to worry me. I slowed a step, letting him catch up and nudge me forward again.
"I'm okay," he promised. "Keep going."
In the distant dark, I could hear the rush of some kind of water, though the sludge we were shuffling through had clearly been there long enough to start to rot and solidify. How many prisoners had they brought in this way, I wondered, and how many bodies had they hauled out? I tried not to shudder or turn my light down to see if the water was as red as my mind had made it out to be. I tried to stop myself from picturing the way Jarvan and the others would have dragged Albin out, Kate out, Cole out, their lifeless eyes open, gazing at the string of small flickering lights hanging overhead.
"After this, we're all bathing in bleach," Chubbs informed us, "and burning these clothes. I keep trying to figure out why it smells so much like sulfur, but I think I've decided to leave that one alone for now."
"That's probably for the best," Clancy said.
His face was bone white as he turned into my flashlight's beam, which made his already dark brows and eyes look like they'd been stained with soot.
"How many of these tunnels did the League make?"
"A few," I said. "Why? Planning your escape already?" He snorted.
"Time," I called back.
3:53, Vida answered. "Can you see the end?"
"No."
I felt the first cold drip of panic down my spine. No, I couldn't. We'd been walking for close to a half hour, and it felt like we hadn't covered any ground at all. It was the same cement walls, the same sloshing of our footsteps. Every once in a while, one of our flashlight beams would catch a rat as it scampered against the wall or darted into some black crack in the ground. The tunnel seemed to draw us into its darkness like a deep breath. The walls shrank around our heads and shoulders again, forcing me to bend at the waist. How much longer could it be? Another half hour? An hour? Were we really going to have less than that to find the kids and get them back out again?
"We're almost there,"
Liam whispered, taking my arm and aiming the flashlight toward the far end of the tunnel, where the path began to slope upward, out of the sludge,
where there was a large metal door.
"Is that it?"
I nodded. Relief and adrenaline pulsing through me as I whirled back toward the others.
"Okay," I called softly. "This is it. Vida, start the clock. 15 minutes in and out. Everyone remember what you're doing?"
Jude squeezed past us to get to the electronic lock that flashed on as he approached. I scanned the nearby ceiling and walls, looking for any sort of camera, only half surprised when I didn't find one.
Interesting.
Albin had either been dedicated to keeping the interrogation block a protected, classified secret from anyone other than senior staff and advisors, or he had been worried about the thought of someone getting visual evidence of the people he was trafficking in and out. Both, probably.
Good. One less thing to worry about.
I had just clicked the flashlight off when I felt a warm hand close around my arm. I turned right into Liam's waiting arms. The kiss was over before it ever really started. A bruising single touch filled with enough urgency, enough frustration and wanting to send my blood rushing. I was still trying to catch my breath when he pulled back, his hands on my face, his lips close enough to mine for me to feel him pant, too. Then he was stepping back, away, letting distance flood in between us again. His voice was low,
Rough.
Give 'em hell, darling.
And for the love of God, bitch, don't get stabbed this time, Vida added. I would have smiled if I hadn't heard Clancy's faint laughter at my right. Any sign of trouble from you is the only excuse I need to use this, I warned him, pressing the gun to the curve of his skull. The only excuse I need to leave your body down here to be eaten by the rats.
Got it, Clancy said in his low, velvety tones. And if I'm good, do I get a kiss, too?
I shoved Clancy forward, keeping a grip on the collar of his shirt.
Okay, I'm ready,
Jude said as he put his hand against the lock pad to fry it.
Lead on, leader!
The air down in the interrogation block was no fresher or cleaner than the tunnel had been. The familiar stench of human vomit and filth twisted my gut as I stepped through the doorway and down the short flight of stairs. I had my flashlight in one hand and the gun in my other, both aimed at the door on the other end of the hallway of metal doors with their observation windows. I swept the beam of pale light around the space and, finding it clear, signaled for the others to come through.
Right behind you,
Vida called, her heavy footsteps matching my pace. Somewhere behind us in the dark, the others were working their way down the doors, looking for prisoners. For Cole. At the door, I crouched, releasing my grip on Clancy's shirt and motioning for Jude to get behind me. Whether I actually drew it up from deep in my memory or found it naturally, my training with the League had me propping the door open, scanning the hall with my gun in front of me before I so much as thought about stepping through. My pulse pounded in my ears, jumping. Jumping, jumping with my nerves as I stepped out into the hallway and pulled Jude after me. Vida split with us as we came around the hallway's curve and took the first set of stairs. One level, I thought. Fifth door on the right. She has the hard job here, not you. You have one level to go up. She has two to get to the surveillance room. One level, fifth door on the right. There was a loud clatter to my left. I skidded to a stop, Jude crashing into my back. My heart was in my throat when I turned back to where Clancy stood a short distance ahead, fading into the dim light. I jogged to catch up to him, waving him forward. We kept to the curve, heading around to the other staircase. Without the gentle hum of static in the computer room, it felt like the first I'd ever stepped foot in this place. Which was why, I guess, it was appropriate that the first unfriendly face we saw after we climbed the stairs and opened the door to the next level was one I didn't recognize at all. There were dozens of agents at the League's headquarters in Georgia, even more at the one in Kansas. I should have known Jarvin and the others would bring in every sympathetic soul they could to help take Albin out. I could smell the alcohol on him, the spice of whatever he had eaten for dinner that night. He must have been headed up to the agent quarters on the first level, but the sight of us was clearly enough to make him forget as much. His shaggy blonde hair fell into his eyes as he jumped at our sudden appearance. The lazy, stupid smile on his face dropped to a scowl.
"What the hell are you doing out of bed?"
he demanded, reaching for me. I was faster, whipping the butt of the gun across his face and yanking him back into the stairwell. Jude caught the door before it slammed shut, peeking out through a crack to watch the hall. Slipping into a drunk mind was like sliding a spoon through pudding. The only challenge was trying to find what I was looking for in the tangle of thoughts, all of which seemed to wash into one another.
"Rue," Jude whispered, "let's go."
If the man's memory was right, there were other agents on this floor, most of them in the infirmary, but one for sure, stationed between the doors of the two sleeping rooms. I dragged the agent off to the side of the stairs, narrowly avoiding where Clancy stood silently waiting. I tucked the man into a corner and relieved him of the knife he was carrying in his back pocket. "Stay behind me," I told Jude, my eyes on the way Clancy seemed to be fading in and out of the shadows. The whole time. The power was still out, and the hallway was little more than a dark curtain we were trying to fight our way through. They used glow-in-the-dark tape along the edges of the floor and around the different door handles and lock pads, but the combined light was less than a fraction of what it would have been if I could have turned my flashlight on. I counted the door handles as we moved. 1, 2, 3. This is actually going to work. 4, 5. Please let this work. The agent posted outside of the sleeping rooms, Agent Clarkson, wasn't a stranger. She was tall, lanky, with dark features and a fondness for knife fighting that had gone uncontested for years. She'd been fighting so hard to be made a senior agent, her confidence had warped into desperation, and then, from there, a frustration that she could only ever take out on the ones below her. Us. She was the opposite of Kate in so many ways that hadn't mattered before now.
Andrea, I called softly.
Andrea?
Shell? She said. It's already time. I thought wake-up was at 5.
There was a flutter of movement about 7 feet ahead on my left. I couldn't meet her eyes to trap her that way, but the moment I caught the whiff of detergent and the subtle shift of warm breath that stirred the air in front of me, I lashed an arm out, catching her across the chest. Her gun clattered loudly against the floor, but her body was soft and silent as I pushed the image of her sitting and sinking into a deep sleep. She slumped against me, and I eased her down onto the floor. Jude bolted past me, heading for the boys' door. I took the handle of the girls' door, the same I'd opened for months without a second thought, and stepped inside, pulling the door shut silently behind Clancy. I flicked on my flashlight.
Up,
I started to say, shining it into the nearest bunk. The room wasn't large. It only needed to house 12 girls, though there'd always been an extra bunk bed, crowding the right wall, on the off chance the league ever picked up another kid. The bunk Vida and I shared, in the back right corner, had been neatly made, the sheets stretched tightly over the mattress with Vida's military-like precision. All of them were. Almost like there was no one left to sleep here. Too late.
Don't say it, I warned Clancy. Not one damn word.
He stared ahead at the empty bunks, a cold expression on his face, but he stayed silent. My knees buckled slightly, mirroring the feeling of my heart as it dropped like a stone through my chest. Too late. Those girls. All of them. They were... I pressed the heels of my palms against my forehead, slamming them there over and over as a silent scream rippled up my throat. Oh my God! All of them? Too late! I ripped the door back open, letting Clancy slip out ahead of me as we moved to the boys' room. Jude wouldn't know, wouldn't think to be silent. He'd wake up the entire base. Where the girls' room had been cold and dark, this one was filled with the light of flashlight lanterns and the natural body heat of 20 kids, all awake, fully dressed, and crammed together on the bunk beds. My eyes flew around each of their faces before they settled on the small pile of weapons gathered at Jude's and Nico's feet in the center of the room.
No, 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 Nico cried. What are you doing here? I told you, we came for you. Jude said. What the heck is going on?
I thought you knew about their plans, I said, about the bombs and camps. You didn't think we'd come to get you out after your friend told us what happened here? Clancy only had that same unreadable expression on his face as he surveyed the room.
Of course I knew!
Nico let out a low moan.
We've been communicating on the chatters this whole time. You were supposed to stay away. I told him to tell you not to come back until it was safe. Until tomorrow. What the hell?
I said, whirling toward Clancy.
What game are you playing?
The faces around me looked just as confused as I felt.
Who are you talking to?
Jude asked, glancing around.
Him!
I snapped, exasperated. I tried to grab Clancy before he slipped back out the door.
Who else?
Rue, Jude began, his eyes wide. There's no one there.
Clancy is...
Clancy? Nico said.
He's here? He came?
He's right here, I said, grabbing for his arm.
My fingers passed right through it, drifting through cold air. The sight of him wavered, flickered, faded into nothing.
He's...
My mind was gripped with panic. I couldn't finish the thought.
I didn't see him get away, Jude said. Did Vida take him to disable the cameras?
Rue?
The cameras are already down. We hacked into the program hours ago,
Nico said.
We have to stay here,
one of the other kids added.
They told us to get into one room and stay until it was all over. You're too early.
Until what's over? Jude was asking. I barely heard him over the roar of blood in my ears.
What's happening at 6?
Nico let his head fall back for a second, taking a deep, frustrated breath.
That's when Kate and the others are coming to get us.
29. It was a trick.
Okay,
I said, trying to catch one of the thoughts flying through my head long enough to put it into words.
Okay, we just...
He was there. In the tunnel. He was there. He came in with us. If he was going to get away, why didn't he do it before? Clancy could influence more than one person. He could have tricked all of us by never getting off the plane in the first place. But he had. I had dragged him down the steps myself, felt his pulse jump when I pushed him toward the ladder down into the tunnel. Why not escape then? It had been just as dark outside.
What should we do?
Jude was asking.
Because he needed me to get him in here before Kate and the others came back. You have to stay here where it's safe,
Nico rambled.
If you go back out there...
I let him play me again.
Ruby? Rue!
Jude grabbed my shoulder, turning me back toward him, forcing me to break my gaze with a crack on the far wall. His hair and eyes were both wild, his freckles overlapping points on a map I'd only recently learned to read. He was anxious, but he wasn't afraid. This was a good Jude to have. Go down and get Chubbs and Liam and bring them up here, I said. But come back if you think, even for a second, that you might get caught. Understand? He nodded, eagerly. Vida will be here in a few minutes, I told the others, and probably in a holy terror of a mood when she realized I'd sent her up to disable the cameras for no reason. Once the four of them are back, move the bunks and barricade the doors. No one else comes in.
What about you?
Nico asked. I have to go take care of your friend, I said, hoping my voice was enough to convey how deep Nico's betrayal had buried us in this mess.
I should go with you, Nico whispered. He's here.
Really? I'd seen that look 100 times, 1,000, at East River. The wide-eyed adoration of someone who either had no idea there were scales under Clancy's skin, or someone unhinged enough to just not care. I thought of Olivia and the way she had all but clawed at her own throat when she said his name. I'd been nursing my anger toward Nico from the moment Clancy told us he'd been slipping him intel all this time, letting it grow into thoughts like, I'll never forgive him. But looking at him now, I forgot it in an instant. Heartache just tore it away. And what was left was the true realization of how damaged the kid in front of me was. His paranoia, his nervous fidgeting, his silent moods. Of course Clancy was his hero. He had saved him from a hell too terrible for nightmares. Did he ask you any questions about HQ recently? I asked. About particular files or people? By the way Nico's mouth seemed to twist, it was looking more and more likely that his loyalty to Clancy was going to win out over his alarm that Clancy had flat-out lied and brought us here, despite the warning he'd given him.
He gave me a list of words and people to look for, Nico said. There were a lot of them. One of them pinged in the system a few weeks ago, an agent called Professor.
I tensed. Professor? You're sure?
The agent was doing some kind of research at our Georgia base, It just suddenly popped up on the classified server a few weeks ago. I think he knew who it was because he wanted the base's location. What had the advisor said when he came into Albin's office all of those weeks back? Something about a situation in Georgia with Professor and a project called Snowfall. What about stuff here at HQ? He asked about the different tunnels and the blackouts, Nico said slowly. What else? I pressed. I was aware of the ticking clock, even if he wasn't. What about the blackouts? He wanted to know if they shut off things like the lock pads or retinal locks. I turned on my heel, throwing Jude off me as I opened the door and bolted out into the hallway. Spots flashed in front of my eyes as they struggled to adjust again. I counted off the door handles as I ran. I kept to the outside curve, one eye always on the dark infirmary windows to my right. They'd drawn all the curtains. Not even the machine lights were bleeding through. In fact, the only light on the entire second level seemed to be the flashlight Clancy clenched between his teeth as he riffled through the filing cabinets inside of Albin's office. All of the lock pads and retinal locks were on the backup power generator, and normally they would have been enough to keep even Clancy out had they actually still been attached to the door. Someone had taken something, a crowbar, an axe, a small explosive, and blown them off that way. I slid forward, nudging the door open farther as I slid my gun out of the waistband of my jeans. Clancy made a small triumphant noise as he ripped a bulging red folder free from where it had been trapped among 100 others. He wasted no time flipping through the pages as he turned back around to Albin's desk. Someone had flipped it onto its side as he or she ransacked the place. He used one of its wide, flat legs to lay the folder out and free up his hand to hold the flashlight. The look on his face was so painfully eager, I felt a twinge of apprehension. "Found what you were looking for?" Clancy's head shot up at the same moment his hand slid the folder back, off the desk, into a metal trash can. For a moment, anger fought with exasperation on his face, but Clancy settled on a devastating smile as he stared down the barrel of the gun.
"I did, but don't you have more important things to worry about?"
His voice had taken on the quality of smoke.
"Other people more important than me?"
He inclined his head toward the other end of Albin's office, and even before I turned, the metallic scent of warm, sticky blood was everywhere. Just past my initial line of sight, I saw the two of them on the floor. Chubbs had crumpled, curling in on himself the way a leaf would just before it fell from the tree in autumn. Liam was slumped over him, his face the color of ice, and he was looking at me, watching with unblinking eyes that had faded from a pale blue to a dull gray. His arm had been thrown out over Chubbs, like he had tried to shield him, and now those same hands that had held my face so gently between them. They were in the pool of dark liquid gliding along the concrete floor. The gun slipped out of my hand. Clancy skirted around Albin's desk, watching me with that same faint smile. He dropped what looked like a lighter into the trash can. "Not real." I forced the words through my mind. "Not them." I forced myself to look again. Really look, no matter how horrifying the image was. Chubbs's glasses were gold instead of silver. Liam's hair was longer than it was now. Clancy clearly hadn't made as close of a study of the way his hair curled at the ends as I had. It was a painfully close, near flawless imitation. But it wasn't them. I let Clancy come up beside me and allowed him 3 seconds of thinking he'd be able to slip by me, distracted as I was by my own grief. He was murmuring something in low, husky tones. He was close enough now for me to feel his warm breath on my cheek, which meant he was also close enough for me to punch him in the throat. I threw my mind at him in the same blow, drawing it down like a knife and shredding the image of Chubbs and Liam he'd pushed there. Clancy stumbled out into the hallway, clutching his head, gasping for breath. The image of the woman in the white lab coat filtered through our connection again, but I forced myself to push it away for now. There was a line of smoke rising up from the trash can. I tipped it over, scattering the burning pages onto the ground, stamping out the flames under my boot. If he wanted these pages gone, I wanted to see them.
Damn it!
He was panting when I met him again in the hallway, heaving in a deep breath, falling to his knees. There was some thin, fraying line of connection between our minds. I seized it before it could snap completely, flooding his brain with the illusion of heat. I couldn't see him in the dark, but I could hear him frantically slapping at his arms and legs, at the limbs his mind was telling him were burning down to the bone. Then his hand slowed to a stop.
"You," Clancy began, "you really want to play this game?"
There was a kiss of cold metal against the back of my neck, so suddenly that I had already convinced myself it was another one of his mind games. But when you lose a sense like sight, it's true what they say. The rest of them are sharpened to ruthless efficiency. I felt the warm breath, heard the squeak of additional boots, smelled his sweat. Agents. They'd found us. Clancy twisted away to run. I didn't see it happen, only heard the sickening crack as something hard connected with his head and sent him crumpling to the ground. And there was Jarvan's voice in the dark saying,
"I knew you'd be back."
There were his hands, as one closed over the back of my neck and roughly shoved me down to my knees. The barrel slid down to the sweet spot where my skull met my spine.
"Rob said all we'd have to do is wait."
In their fatigues, he and the other League agent behind him were a shade lighter than the air around them. The safety switched off.
"You don't want to do this," I warned, feeling the invisible hands inside of my mind unfurl.
I felt anxious, but not afraid. Controlled calm.
"No," Jarvan agreed. "I'd rather do this."
There was a faint click, the only warning before the white noise flooded the hallway and drowned me alive. It was possible to forget that kind of agony after all. There was a time in my life, a few months into my stay at Thurmond, that they had turned the white noise on nearly every day. Back when there were reds to control and oranges to punish, a single wrong look would have a PSF radioing into the control tower. It was a given part of my life. Maybe I had just grown so used to it, the actual impact dulled over time. But it had been months, and the onslaught of pain twisted my stomach to the point of sickness. I collapsed onto the floor, close enough to Clancy that I could see the cut across his forehead seeping blood. There were thoughts in my head. There was a voice that said, "You can take Jarvan. You can take him. You can ruin him." But even that was silenced as the white noise rose and fell over us like a wave, crushing down on my chest. And it was amazing. Everything we could do, the kind of power we could have over others, it all meant nothing. It all came to nothing. At Thurmond, we would have heard two warning blares, and a heartbeat later, the noise would explode from the camp's loudspeakers. It wasn't something that could be easily described. It was shrieking static, cranked up, sharpened to drill through the thickest part of your skull. It passed through us like an electrical current, making our muscles jump and twitch and sing with pain, until the only thing left to do was to try to drive your head into the ground to escape it. If I were lucky, I wouldn't pass out. I wasn't so lucky. I felt myself fade, drift back into the darkness of the hallway. I couldn't move my arms out from where they were pinned under my chest. My legs had turned to air. Finally, seeing that I couldn't so much as lift my head, Jarvan switched it off. I drifted from one moment to the next, my ears ringing. The blackness of the hall pulled me in, pushing my head under its murky surface. When I came to again, someone had a grip on my arm. I could hear Jarvan talking to the others around him, only because he was shouting now,
"Get the damn lights on! I don't care what you have to do! Switch them on, damn it! Something's going on! Can someone just give me a damn light?"
It was a warm southern voice that answered him.
Sure, brother. I got you covered.
There was a snap, just one, and the tiniest flame appeared in the dark, illuminating Cole Stewart's furious face. I thought, at first, he'd struck a match, but the fire at his fingertips bloomed, swallowing his hand, devouring the arm he sent flying toward Jarvan's face. There was screaming, so much screaming, as the fires around us grew, catching the soldiers behind him and engulfing them in a wave of heat that sent them running down the hall, stumbling over one another until they finally collapsed. The smell of burned skin made my stomach convulse. I couldn't escape it.
Holy shit, you're...
one of the agents began to say. One of us. My mind finished, shutting down at the sight of the fire between Cole's fingers again. The way he threw a ball of it at the agent who had spoken. How he stoked it, letting it rip over the screaming man's body until I could only see the dark silhouette trapped in the flames dancing over his skin. Red. No. No, he was... Cole was too old. He wasn't... Hey! Hey! The fire was gone now, but Cole's hands were still hot to the touch as he tried to haul me to my feet. My legs still weren't there. He tried lightly slapping my face.
Shit, kid, come on. You can do this. I know you can.
You... I tried to say. You just... He let out the breath he'd been holding, relieved. Cole lifted me over his shoulder, smacking the back of my thighs in irritation.
Damn it, Jim, making me worry like that. I heard the calm control from down the hall, but I had to wait until he turned it off. I couldn't get close. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
He kicked the door open to Albin's office, dropping me to the ground behind the desk, rearranging my limbs so I was at least sitting up, and unholstered one of his handguns to press into my limp fingers. Then he gripped my face between his palms.
You can't tell. You hear me? No one else can know, not even Liam, especially not Lee. Okay? Nod your head.
Jesus, Liam didn't know? No one else knew about this?
You, me, Kate, and Albin, Cole said as if reading my thoughts. That's it. And we're now a party of three. You tell, and it's over for me.
I nodded. Other one, I said weakly, tilting my head toward the hall. Cole grunted.
I don't do the damsel in distress thing with dudes.
I shot him what I hoped was a glare and not a cross-eyed look. He sighed and stood, squaring his shoulders in the way Liam always did when he was set on something. Cole disappeared for